Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Thomas Cook India Limited Q4 and FY26 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions as the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. I now hand the conference over to Ms. Purva Jhanwar from 360 ONE Capital Market Private Limited. Thank you, and over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Rio. Welcome, everyone, and thank you for joining us on Thomas Cook India Limited Q4 FY26 earnings conference call. From the company, we have with us Mr. Mahesh Iyer, Managing Director and Chief Executive Officer, and the senior management team. We would like to begin the call with brief opening remarks from the management, and following which we will have the forum open for an interactive Q&A session. I would now like to invite Mr. Mahesh Iyer to make initial remarks, and thank you. Over to you, Mahesh, sir.
Thank you, Purva. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us as we discuss the Q4 and FY26 financial and operating performance. While this may not be a brief call, this may be a little longer as we have a lot of topics to speak about, so please pardon me if this is going to be a little longer one. Before we begin, I would like to introduce the management team joining me on the call today. I have with me Vishal Suri, Managing Director of SOTC, Debashish Nandi, Group CFO of the Thomas Cook India Group, Vikram Lalwani, Managing Director of Sterling Holiday Resorts, and K.S. Ramakrishnan, Managing Director of DEI. Brijesh Modi, who is the CFO at Thomas Cook India Limited, Urvashi Bhutani, who heads investor relationships. Before I walk you through our performance, I think it's important that I set the context because 2026 did not play out as in a normal operating environment, and it was not anywhere close to what a normal year would be. The year opened with Pahalgam attack and the subsequent Operation Sindoor in April 2025, events that led to airspace disruption, weakened travel confidence, and slower pace of business. As the year progressed, the situation in the Middle East further intensified with the U.S.-Iran-Israel conflict, resulting in continued disruption to westbound travel routes, pressure on airline capacity, elevated fuel and operating costs, and softer consumer sentiment globally. These developments had a cascading impact across the travel ecosystem, resulting in elevated airfares, tighter inventory availability, higher input costs, and increasing pressure on pricing across the supply chain. At the same time, currency volatility, particularly the weakness of the rupee to the dollar and euro, added further cost pressures for the outbound travel business and consumers alike. What compounded the impact was the timing of these events. Both of these landed on top of our most important travel-focused seasons, the window in which we do a large part of our annual business were either lost or were severely shortened. Thus, I think it is important to view our FY26 performance in two distinct lenses. The first 9 months of FY2026 were our operating conditions and travel demand were relatively more stable, and Q4 were the impact of these geopolitical and macroeconomic developments became significantly more visible across the industry. For the 9 months of FY26, we reported a 7% increase in our top-line growth, whereas our EBITDA improved marginally. During Q4 of FY26, the group's revenue stood at 1,707 million, reflecting a 10% decrease against the same period last year. This is the number that carries the full weight of the external environment, the Middle East overhang, cost headwinds, and the travel market that was recalibrating in a real-time basis. And the second lens is the geography where our India operations have shown resilience and maintained EBT for FY2026 and grew by 16% in Q4 FY2026, fueled by a strong performance of the financial services, short-haul outbound, corporate travel, India inbound business, and MICE. Sterling Resorts also contributed positively to the overall group's performance with a 19% increase in top-line during the quarter and 7% growth for the full year on the back of a growing resort network. Vikram will share more details on this when he speaks. Our overseas entities also remain resilient, except for the destinations which happen to be directly impacted by the war, and that's Desert Adventures, our destination management unit in Middle East, and DEI, our digital imaging business, which has around 50% of our revenue attributed to the UAE markets. Ram will speak about this and give you a detailed perspective on DEI's performance in his remarks. On a full year basis, while our income increased to 83,982 million, a 3% increase on a consolidated basis, our EBIT was impacted by the geopolitical crisis and was 14% lower than last year at 3,268 million. Before we move on to the segmented analysis, I will discuss the strategic divestment announcement that was made in March 2026, where the board has granted in-principle approval for the demerger of our resort business into Sterling Holiday Resorts. This is a significant strategic move for our organization, one that we believe will unlock value for our shareholders. For Thomas Cook India Limited, this restructuring allows us to streamline our capital structure and concentrate our resources on our travel and financial services business. The consolidation of our face value per share, along with the merger of the three dormant subsidiaries, further simplifies our corporate structure and improves our earning per share, directly benefiting our shareholders. Let me move on to the travel to the segments and give you an insight into the various segments that performed during the year. To begin with, on the financial services. The financial services segment reported a strong outcome on the face of a stretched operating environment. If you look at the LRS data as published by RBI for the period April 2025 to February 2026, the three relevant segments of the travel-related foreign exchange, education and remittance, there is a decline of 3%, 22% and 5% respectively. Now in comparison, TCIL reported a 13% increase in turnover for the holiday segment, 17% in the education segment and 19% in the remittance category. For the quarter in question, the forex revenue increased by 3% to 813 million and EBIT improved by 17% to 392 million with an EBIT margin of 48%. For the full year, our reported revenue and EBIT remained flat at 3,261 million and 1,493 million with an EBIT margin of 46%. This clearly showcases the strong growth we are seeing across the retail foreign exchange segment, which today contributes approximately 80% of our total forex reported revenue, which I must highlight here is on a net basis. The growth has been a result of our constant endeavor to increase our reach via an omni-channel approach. We have expanded our reach by opening 5 new franchises, 1 own outlet and 1 airport counter during the quarter, and also improved our digital penetration, which currently stands at 23% on an increasing transaction base. Our website transaction for the quarter has seen a growth of 65% YOY. Bookings on our app, which is TCPay, saw a 4.9x increase in transaction. Our WhatsApp engagement continues to grow positively with a 2.2x growth year on year, albeit on a smaller base. Our reach via quick commerce, which is Blinkit, has seen a great trajectory and we have witnessed double-digit growth in the from its launch in October last year. We are now present in 6 additional cities, Noida, Kolkata, Jaipur, Ahmedabad, Lucknow and Chandigarh, and increasing our digital distribution network to 12 cities. A quick update on our sub-segments within the foreign exchange space. Holiday and travel-related foreign exchange segment increased 29% in turnover in the quarter and 13% in the year. Again, set in the context with the reduced travel spend as seen from the LRS data, our performance was encouraging. Our approach that one size doesn't fit all with prepaid cards has led to a deep customer segmentation, and that along with our distribution is working well for us. Our education business under the retail segment has grown rather positively, especially given the stress in the segment as per the LRS data. Despite the contraction in the overall student segment, we gained market share. We optimized demand that was moving towards alternate destinations. Our relationships with over 800 marquee education counselors across the country gave us a genuine on-the-ground advantage. Added to that, our partnerships with large NBFCs, namely Credila, Avans, Poonawalla FinCorp, under the NBFC umbrella, both gave us reach and credibility to capture the education loan demand, resulting in larger FX spends. On the corporate portfolio today, we cater to about 1,100 corporates spanning across large and mid-sized and SME customers. The turnover in this segment grew 4% in the quarter and 5% for the full year. A noteworthy development on our prepaid forex card is that it has expanded today to 28 global currency from 12 that we are operating till December of 2025, creating India's one of the largest, widest currency portfolio on the prepaid card segment. Our float as we speak stands at about 16 billion rupees on a total prepaid card load volumes of 764 million US dollars. Moving on to the travel and related segment, I have shared the broader context under which we operated during the year, and in this case, our geographical as well as the political, as well as the portfolio diversity in what is what gave us room to maneuver. We reported a total revenue of 67,025 million for the year, which is an increase of 4%, and our EBIT was down 11% to 2,218 million with an EBIT margin of 3.3%. And this largely reflects the geopolitical impact in our overseas subsidiaries, which I will speak about in the subsequent paragraphs. On the B2C front, our B2C segment, which accounts for 27% of the travel portfolio, grew by 8% during the year and the quarter. And this is despite the shortened and the impacted key booking periods during the year, which I referred to in my opening remarks. Leisure holidays saw an 8% increase in the quarter and during the year. This was led by a 17% increase in the short-haul bookings during the year and a 21% increase in the quarter. Demand for short-haul destinations such as China, Vietnam, Cambodia and Japan continued to be very strong. Long-haul growth for the full year, while positive, remained subdued, largely due to the impact of two big seasons impacted by the various evolving geopolitical conditions along with the pressure on supply and pricing. Our domestic portfolio was also impacted during the year from the start due to the Pahalgam attack, the unfortunate Air India crash, and the overall uncertainty due to the geopolitical issues and the absence of Kumbh and Kashmir, which got impacted on the domestic front. However, our focus on this segment has been to concentrate on select markets such as Bhutan, Andaman, and the pilgrimage travel, which is Chardham, Kailash, Ayodhya, Varanasi, Muktinath. In fact, SOTC has partnered with Anuradha Podwal to promote Darshan's, the spiritual packages portfolio that we operate. Our results are thus a result of our model being agile and proactive initiatives in this area. We pivoted quickly to respond and actively sell alternate long-haul destination, doubled down on our eastbound short-haul, leaned into domestic travel and meaningfully expanded our pilgrimage travel proposition. These weren't reactive patches, these were deliberate strategic redirects made quickly and executed well by our teams. During the quarter, we continued to strengthen our leisure portfolio through multiple customer-focused initiatives. We launched the Bhutan Charter ex-Bangalore and Ahmedabad to capitalize on the direct connectivity and growing travel interest to the destination. I'm happy to report that the charter flights that we are operating for Bhutan have been completely sold out. We also introduced TravShow, a pioneering travel protection initiative designed to address the evolving realities of modern travel and provide customers with greater confidence and peace of mind. We also launched an industry-first visa rejection cover, a pioneering groundbreaking insurance solution that safeguards travelers against financial loss arising from visa rejections. In terms of forward booking, as we speak, short haul remains the preferred choice and the reasons are fairly straightforward. Airfares, decision making happening closer to travel date and visa processes are less of a hurdle. In an environment where confidence is still finding its footing, this combination matters more than ever. Geopolitical tensions have materially impacted travel demand, with long-haul forward bookings witnessing weakness, especially in the European destinations and some part of our eastbound destinations. including a complete drop in volumes in UAE and CIS markets. We are seeing airfares surge by 30 to 50% on most westbound routes. Coming to the B2B businesses, which account for 73% of our reported travel number, the full year shows a moderated 2% increase in sales and the quarter declined by 18%. Important for me to reiterate certain events that were present in Q4 last year, which we had also discussed in the earnings call previously. We had about 100 crores of business that was done on the government on the India My side, which was not available in the current quarter. We also had about 100 crores of My sales that happened in our destination managed business in Dubai, which is Desert Adventures, which was not available in the current quarter. Now, if you look at our Q4 result, this is a combination of the above two events as well as the impact of the US-Iran war, which directly impacted our operations in Desert Adventures, which is our destination management unit in the Middle East. To break the B2B travel segment further down, our India DMS portfolio grew by about 5% during the quarter. The business had a healthy Jan and February, which was partially offset by the weak March sales, as was the case with other units. On the international DMS side, revenue increased by 3% in the year and saw a decline of 24% for the quarter. Let me quickly list down some of the performance drivers here. The largest impact of the geopolitical instability is visible in the number for our Desert Adventures operations in the Middle East, which declined by 50% in the quarter, along with volume shortfall due to the absence of large MICE events. The other entities have helped offset some of this by a relatively good performance. Noteworthy amongst them is Asian Trails, which is in the Asia-Pacific region, saw their revenue improve by 18% during the year and 6% for the quarter, led by a strong performance Thailand and Malaysia and some part of our China operations. This was partially offset by geopolitical disruptions impacting European source market and the Middle East transit routes. Allied Pre-Pro, which is our operations in the US, saw its revenue growing by 9% during the year and 12% in Q4 FY26, supported by higher volumes despite continued challenges in the US inbound travel driven by visa and uncertainty in those markets. Private safaris in Southern Africa remained strong, with revenue growing by 23% for the quarter and 34% for the full year, while East Africa saw an 87% increase for the quarter and 18% for the full year, supported by peak season and sustained momentum from chartered operations and demand from key markets, including USA and India. Coming to the next category in the B2B segment, which is MICE, the segment reported a 2% decline during the quarter, and I did elaborate is due to the absence of government events being a one-off event that happened last year same time. However, if you look at the breakup we have provided on a full year basis, our corporate MICE business has increased by 6% and increased by 21% in the current quarter. Having said so, we are seeing our H2 pipeline building up. There is a bit of wait and watch approach that corporates are taking at this point in time, and hence we believe that some of this demand will come back and translate in the later half of the year. And the last segment is the corporate travel, which has reported a turnover of 26 billion rupees and a reported revenue of 1541 million for the full year, which is a 19% increase YOY and 28% growth in revenue during the quarter. I reiterate, this segment is the only travel segment which is reported on a net basis. In terms of our portfolio, we have about 8,000 corporate clients with digital adoption of over 30% amongst them. We acquired 8 new accounts in Q4 FY2026 across financial services, automobile, telecom and energy sector, and 4 new large corporate accounts are in the pipeline. Our air volume recorded a growth of 7.3% YOY in Q4 FY26 and 4.8% for the full year of FY2026, with international air volume growing by 19% YOY in quarter and 7% for the full year. If you look at the non-air part of our business, hotel volumes and transaction grew 7.6% and 10.7% respectively YOY in Q4 FY2026. Before I hand over the call to Vikram for his comments on Sterling Holiday, I just want to say the environment currently is very volatile, with customer sentiments being very low and travel decisions shortened. We are witnessing a softened forward booking pipeline, were in the near short term, the large volumes coming out of long haul will not be completely substituted by short haul and domestic. However, we continue to create offerings both from a product and pricing perspective, mindful of the elevated input costs and give more options for our customers to make that holiday decisions. Our focus continues on prudent revenue management and tactical cost optimizations to tide over the current geopolitical environment. With this, I'd like to hand over the call to Vikram for his comments. Thank you.
Thanks, Mahesh. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Vikram Lalwani. I'm the Managing Director and CEO of Sterling Holiday Resorts Limited. I'm also joined by my colleague, Mr. L. Krishna Kumar, who is the Chief Financial Officer. It's a pleasure speaking with all of you again. And thank you for joining us today as we present Sterling's performance for the quarter and the year ended March 31st, 2026. FY25-26 marks a defining year for Sterling, a decisive inflection point where scale, profitability, and balance sheet strength have expanded simultaneously, not sequentially. We are now operating at a sweet spot of scale where incremental growth is increasing margins and the cash. Over the last few years, Sterling has consistently demonstrated sustained growth with improving operating leverage. This reflects the structural improvement in our business model and the benefits of scale now flowing through meaningfully into profitability and cash generation. I'm pleased to share that Q4 FY26 was another record quarter for us across all key operating and financial metrics. Sterling delivered its best ever Q4 number, EBITDA and profit before tax. Just a few highlights on the Q4 FY26. The total revenue for Q4 FY26 stood at 1,408 million, registering a double-digit growth of 14%. EBITDA grew 10% at 348 million INR. PBT increased 18% to 207 million INR. With this, we completed our 25th consecutive profitable quarter. Our cash reserve stands close to 3,400 million while continuing to maintain a completely debt-free balance sheet. The resort business continues to be the key engine driver for Sterling's growth, clearly demonstrating the success of our strategic transformation that we've undertaken a couple of years ago towards a focused hospitality-led operating model. Room revenue for the quarter grew nearly 40% at 672 million. Occupancy improved to 64%, ARR increased by 12% to 6,347, and the RevPAR increased 16% despite a 20% increase in overall room inventory. Despite weather conditions disrupting Q2, and this being a first full financial year after the sunset of the membership acquisition, for the full year FY26, Sterling delivered a total revenue of 5,487 million INR. EBITDA stood at 1,701 million, and the margins are healthy at 31%. Profit before tax is at 1,142 million with PBT margins of 21%. The core revenue generation of the company is now sustainably driven by the resort business and operating hospitality platform, reflecting strength, sustainability and maturity of our transform business model. As we had indicated in our earlier earnings calls as well, we expected H2 performance to be stronger than H1. I'm pleased to share that this guidance has played out well. The two record quarters in H2, that is Q3 and Q4, enabled H2 revenues to outperform H1 revenues by 21% and over. We now have 78 resorts, hotels and retreats, approximately 3,800 rooms across 65 destinations in India. We added nearly 1.5 resorts or launched 1.5 resorts per month last year and almost 33 resorts over the last 24 months. A 29% CAGR growth in resorts over the last 2 years. Our expansion journey continues at an accelerated scale. We expect to cross 95 resorts and 4,500 rooms in 2027, with more than 20 sign-ups in our pipeline actively coming on board. Our focus is on Tier 2, Tier 3, high-growth business come leisure corridors. Today, 62% of our rooms are P&L-led, while 38% of our rooms are managed inventory. As we scale further, we are consciously optimizing our portfolio through a judicious mix of P&L-led growth and an asset-light expansion, which is what we've been saying in an asset-light model. This strategy is supported by disciplined sweating of our own assets as well over the last few years, which continues to drive sustained top-line and bottom-line acceleration. At the same time, Sterling remains future-ready for any kind of expansions, including in greenfield developments across our key land banks. Importantly, we have achieved this while maintaining healthy profitability metrics with an EBITDA margins of 31% and over, and PBT margins of 21% combined with a debt-free balance sheet. Our cash reserves have grown at a multi-year CAGR of 55%. Delivering high growth with strong capital discipline remains a rare and differentiated combination which we have attained. On the operational front, Sterling continues to strengthen its brand and customer propositions as well. Our customer experience metrics continues to remain strong despite scaling, with 30 resorts and 11 restaurants earning TripAdvisor Excellence Awards. Sterling Khana and Dune Diner, a restaurant at Sterling Masuri, was also awarded the best of best in TripAdvisor, putting them in the worldwide top 1% in their category. We have significantly strengthened our operating frameworks, governance processes, and scalable systems. We have leveraged technology by developing first-of-its-kind, custom-built Sterling One, powered by distributed ledger technology on a PHP application, providing direct access to 7,000 travel partners and 360 corporates and over in India at this point. Our technology is powered by AI to provide value-added interaction across the customer journey and provides us with deeper customer insights to improve our customer offerings. Having attained meaningful scale, we are now in a planning phase of a complete re-architecture of the brand that should begin reflecting across customer touch points in the next 2 to 4 quarters. In parallel, as you're aware, the demerger process from Thomas Cook has also been initiated. While we remain watchful of short-term headwinds like weather and impacts on input costs that may impact us, we have the resilience to weather such headwinds as demonstrated in FY26 and are confident that our long-term drivers remain intact. Looking ahead, we believe the transformation phase is now largely behind us. We are entering the next phase of value creation, accelerated value creation. Sterling is now just not growing faster, it is growing better with greater predictability, stronger operating leverage, increasing cash generation and disciplined capital allocation. We remain extremely optimistic and confident for the year ahead, including Q1 of FY27, and look forward to creating long-term value for all the stakeholders. Thank you once again for your time to listen and for your continued support and trust. Thank you.
Ram, you can go ahead, please.
Yeah. Hi, good evening, everyone. My name is K.S. Ramakrishnan. I'm the Managing Director and CEO of Digi Photo Entertainment Imaging. First and foremost, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to present the last quarter and the year performance. As you can see, we've had, as Mahesh mentioned, we are one of the most affected in the group due to the current geopolitical scenario. Our quarter 4 2026 posted a 194 crore top line against a 201 crore top line of a similar period in quarter 4 25, against which we also posted EBIT of negative 10 crore against 7 crore positive in the same quarter last year. Throwing a little more light on what exactly happened in the quarter, I think it's a well-known news that the geopolitical scenario in the Middle East was the worst and affected the market a lot. DEI's overall business was 50% depending and is contributed from the Middle East region. While the quarter four, Jan and Feb were trending in the right direction, we were posting about 9% better performance than the same Jan, Feb of the previous year. March turned to be a train smash. This train smash was further quadrupled because it was supposed to be our best March in the last 5 years, as Eid was falling on March in this year. Had it been the norm, we would have posted another 40 to 50 crores over on the top line and an additional at least 8 to 10 crores on the bottom line, which would have made our overall year look a lot better. Having said that, in spite of all the challenges, this was partially offsetted by our Far East and APAC operations, where we have posted a fairly healthy, consistent growth. Hong Kong and Malaysia as markets have done better than the past. We've had some new sites coming on board in that region too. So that helped us to partially offset the same. Going forward, looking at this whole thing, we are looking at the time in March also was very little for us to do any correction to save the quarter or the year in any better way. But immediately the company has taken all possible steps on optimization and cost correction going forward. And that will be seen in the coming quarters as we trend along. We have also a lot of automation and optimization that has been implemented within the group, within the company and across the markets. As I've been always mentioning about our new software solution, that has finally gone fully live and has been stably operating for the last 2 months consistently across all our operations. So VC is now 100% live. This optimization will be directly helping our direct cost on people, on our capture, on increasing our captures and our sales. The digital sales journey, as we've already implemented, is showing us a healthy trend of traction. We have activated a WhatsApp channel, which is further helping us to boost some conversion. And we are seeing this through the markets that we are open. Middle East right now is slowly just coming out of it. I think what we forecast going forward will be approximately a 50 to 60% recovery towards the end of the year. That's how Middle East looks like. Whilst doing that, we'll be staying focused on penetrating our existing markets in the Far East and opening new locations within the markets that we're already operating, thereby helping us to better our margins and also optimize our cost. We are hoping to see sizable betterment as these quarters go along, although I would resonate with what Mahesh said, that we do not see this year any way getting or delivering what we had, what it was supposed to, but our aim would be to make sure that we still make money and trend ourselves into the coming year where we can still step up and live up and deliver what we're supposed to be delivering in the year 2026. That's all from my side. Thank you.
Leah, you can open the floor for Q&A, please. Okay.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handset while asking a question. The first question is from the line of Soumya S. from Insightful Investment. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for the opportunity. So my question was regarding the Sterling Resort. As we have been adding hotels and, the room number of rooms has been added Q1Q and YOY, I just wanted to know if the occupancy, if we expect a like-for-like improvement in occupancy in Q1 and how Q1 has been so far.
Okay. Hi, Soumya. This is Vikram Lalwani. Thanks for your question. So I'd like to split your question into two parts of answers. One is I'll answer it in form of a Q1 outlook that you're looking at. I think in general, as I said, we are extremely optimistic about Q1. As we are in Q1 as of now, we see no headwinds, fortunately. I think we will have, a good, healthy Q1. Number two is, having said that, in terms of the scale that we've attained, we added 14 resorts last year and another 14 or so year before last. And despite that, we've actually started showing improvements in occupancies from 61 to 64, even with an increased supply base. So that's the thing. And from a leisure business, again, I've been maintaining that a good occupancy for the entire year is it will be approximately 65, closer towards 70. That's a good optimum occupancy to maintain and hold. Obviously, it will vary season to season, as is Q3 for us is the strongest season now since the last 2 years, strongest quarter. Q1 is a strong quarter, and Q4, which we just concluded, actually, emerged a dark horse and a very strong quarter for us. I think the opportunity is further there to scale, both in terms of supply and to get to the occupancy of 65% to 70% through the year. I hope that answers your question.
Yes, sir. That was great. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
I have just one more question. This one is regarding our outbound travel. So short haul has seen stronger growth for the year. And I just wanted to know if currently, like in Q1, we are seeing the same trend. Because long haul being subdued, I understand what the reasons have already been highlighted.
Samia, I think I kind of addressed that question in my remark, but I reiterate that, yes, we are witnessing double-digit growth as far as the short-haul business is concerned, and that's obvious reasons because people are looking at destinations which are closer by because time taken to make that decision and the availability of visa and such things are far more easier for a short-haul destinations. Also, you'll appreciate that a lot of these short-haul markets are eastbound, and that's where most of the traffic is currently traveling to. So, yes, to that extent, the short-haul is looking promising at this point in time. It's the pain is on the long-haul side, mostly westbound long-haul, where the volumes are currently subdued.
All right, sir. Thank you so much. That was it.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Heer Gogri from Choice Institutional Equities. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you for the question. I wanted to understand that the war impact is evident, but even that was in Q4, but overall in FY26, we see India DMS grew only by 3%. Also, domestic B2C degrew by 14% in FY26. So, any other reason that you want to highlight apart from the war that is already evident? And also, following up, how do you see Q1? Do you see any recovery in the travel industry overall?
So, you had multiple questions. So, I'll try and address each one of that. To begin with, I think on the domestic side, I alluded to in my opening remark again, the year began with Belgaum, Operation Sindhu. So that impacted because Kashmir was a big market for us. It was roughly about 18-20% of our domestic portfolio, which got impacted during that period. Hence, that volumes was not available. If you look at specifically at a Q1 or a Q4 comparison for FY26 and compare it with the previous year, so the impact of Kashmir, and we also dealt with the Kumbh Mela, which was available in the previous year, which was not transacted this year. So this is the comparison point as far as the domestic is concerned. So impact coming from Kumbh, that was the previous year, and the shortened cycle on Kashmir. I think these are the two large impacts. If I have to kind of exclude that or include that in whichever numbers that you want to do, FY25 or FY26, we'll actually see a growth, which will be more like a double-digit growth that we'll see on the domestic side of it. Coming to your point on the overall landscape as we see in Q1 of FY2027, our belief is that the short-haul and domestic will witness growth. The short-haul, as I mentioned previously to the previous question also, the short-haul is continuing to grow at about at a double-digit pace. The domestic market is also growing. I think it's the long haul where we are seeing a subdued demand, and that's for the obvious reasons that we all know. I will also qualify here that the volumes that we do on short haul and domestic does not completely offset the volume shortfall coming from the long haul, because long haul are large high price products or large ticket size ATVs, as we call it to be. So to that extent, there will be some amount of reduced volumes that we are currently seeing in our forward booking. Having said so, the category that we operate, which is discretionary by nature, is also a category where people do not cancel. It's more like postponement. So our belief is that if the impact of the war is kind of settling down very quickly, you will see this demand coming back in the later half of the year. And that's the view we have at this point in time.
Okay, thank you. Got it for the leisure part. Could you also please talk the same about the corporate and MICE part? I think you mentioned that you're seeing a strong demand there, but are there any expected slowdowns for Q1 with regards to the war impact and any new partnerships that you've had it?
Currently on the corporate travel side, we aren't seeing any reduction in volumes. They continue to trend at similar trend lines that we have seen in the previous year, which is a 7-8% growth that we have seen. So I don't think that's getting subdued. On the MICE side, yes, as I said, the decisions are getting delayed. So a lot of it is a wait and watch approach. So there could be a quarter to quarter shift. But again, as you will appreciate, that MICE is more like a reward and recognition program, R&R, or a sales initiative for a lot of corporates. Hence, these are committed costs. It's just the timing of when that will happen. So my expectation is that a lot of that will come back in, probably if it's not happening in Q1, it will happen in Q2 and Q3.
Okay, got it. And one last question from my side, if I may. I think we have a net cash, cash net of debt around 800-2,000 crores. Could you highlight where how is this cash going to be deployed? Or do we have any strategy there? Like, I think you mentioned new automation. I think that would be one area. But anything else that we have, the management has in mind?
Hi, this is Debashish Nandi. So, to answer your question, yes, you are quite right. We have a large cash, net cash. So, I would rather use the word net cash rather than anything else. And at a net level, yeah, it's about close to about 800 crores, which is the number that we have also talked about. Now, what we intend, obviously, we have some plans of for capital expenditure, which is into software, basically technology, because as you know, travel, not only travel, even other parts of our business, notably financial services and DEI, depends a lot on technology, and therefore there will be increasing investment in technology. That's one. We also would like to sort of pay off our debt, which will be possible over the next couple of years, because there are some long-term loans which has fixed repayment periods. Apart from that, we would be looking at, we have grown through acquisition, we have grown inorganically in the past, and if there is any opportunity for growing inorganically, we'll avail of that. If there is a suitable opportunity which fits our criteria in terms of returns, etc., then we will look for such opportunities.
Okay, sure. Got it. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to all participants, you may press star and one to ask questions. A reminder to all participants, you may press star and one to ask questions. Next question is from the line of Ms. Purva Zanwar from 361 Capital Market. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. So thanks for the opportunity. So my question is on the financial services segment. So if we see our gross turnover in FY26 has grown by about 8% with retail turnover up 10%. Yet our reported revenue declined by 0.5%. Does this indicate increasing margin pressure or deliberate strategy to trade margins for market share gains?
So, Purva, I don't think it's a straight answer like that to say, are we trading margins? No. There are some tactical calls we take with regards to how we go and acquire and you will appreciate that when you are in a digital business, some of it is optically visible to the customer, and hence there is some trade-off that happens. But I think it's more to do with the mix of business that we transact. While the volume will look the way that you said, it's about 8%, on the mix side of it, because if you are concentration on wholesale versus retail, retail versus corporate shifts, I think that there is a likely shift that happens on the margin side of it. The second one, and as I said this before, we report our revenue on a net basis. Now, there are these education consultants and franchisee business that we operate where there is the revenue share. So while we get the gross revenue, there's also a revenue share that happens with them, and then those are also reflected in the net revenue that we report. So again, as I said, there is no margin pressure. There are no challenges on margin. Our retail business continue to operate in the range of about 2 to 2.2%. Our wholesale business continues to operate about 0.6 to 0.7%, and I don't think those margin figures have changed over the last few quarters.
Okay, got it. And second was that earlier we used to guide for around 5% EBIT margins in the travel segment. So given this shift towards short haul from long haul, do we maintain that 5% guidance, or it will take time to achieve that?
So look at it this way, Purva. Whether I sell short haul or I sell long haul, our gross margins are almost the same. They are not too different in that sense. It's just that the unit value of a short haul as compared to long haul is different. So to that extent, as an arithmetic, this number would look lower. Look, this shift is currently happening. We don't know how long this shift will happen. And we've seen gradually more like, a short-haul dominated kind of a travel sentiment that has emerged over the last 2 or 3 years. So I think in that perspective, I would think the 5% that we have said is our objective to get to is not getting disturbed. While there will be temporary setbacks that may come because of the geopolitical, the cost pressures and stuff like that, because our endeavor also is to push the market, make them travel. So there are some tactical calls we'll take. And as you would have seen in the media, we've gone to the market with attractive price points. We are offering cash backs and stuff like that. So there are some tactical calls that we take, which does protect, kind of put some pressure on margins, but those are well planned and kind of tactical in nature. But I think the long-term trajectory on margin remains intact. And also, please remember, when we spoke about the 5% EBIT margin on the travel business, was also based on our DMS operations getting profitable. So we've had this wagery, like you would have seen what happened in Desert Industries, one quarter kind of impacted the full year. And these kind of impacts have, so where their contributions don't come in and kind of drag the overall EBIT for the travel segment. So yeah, it's not a one-size-fits-all kind of an answer. It's more like to do with the B2C side, and within B2C, short haul versus long haul, and within B2B, some segments which have taken the larger load of the geopolitical impact.
Got it. Thank you, sir. That's it.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Chetan from Systematics Group. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for the opportunity. Couple of questions. First, on the foreign exchange part, so in fiscal 26, we have seen comparatively better growth in education and holiday segment compared to the industry. How should we see this going forward in fiscal 27? And RBI has recently issued revised norms for entities dealing in foreign exchange. So any positives or drawbacks for us in this?
Thank you, Chetan, for asking that question. I should have covered that in my commentary. But thank you for asking that. First, let me address the first question, which is on the education segment. As I mentioned, I think it has been one of our strongest year as far as the growth on the education segment is concerned, actually driven by a lot of partnerships that we have had. The NBFC partnership that I spoke about, and also the agency network that we have through which we source this business. So I think it's been a strong moat for us. Also, we have segmented this market. As you know, we have a prepaid card offering specifically focused on the student segment, and a lot of benefit that we have offered to the students specifically targeting this market. So despite a difficult environment where there have been challenges in the US, in the Canada market in terms of intake of students, we have managed to increase our market share in the student overall student segment. My estimate is that for FY27, we will continue to see this trajectory because some of these partnerships we have just signed, they have not traded for the full year, and the full year trading should reflect a better performance for FY27. To your question, the second part of the question, which is on the recently issued notification from RBI, yes, it's a big positive for us. One is because, you know, our license, which is an AD2, largely is a current account-based transaction license. What it has allowed or what the circular talks about is that we can now undertake capital account transaction, by definition, trade transaction, up to 25 lakh rupee per transaction. So that opens up a new avenue of business for us, which currently is outside the ambit and was always a domain of banks. So now we can actually be in that space where we can do trade-related remittances, and you'll appreciate that a lot of SME, MSME companies who do a lot of remittances, and given our partnership both on the Forex side, which is about 1,100 corporates, on the corporate travel side, we have about 800 relationships. So, you know, we have a captive base to whom we can now start offering trade-related services also. Yes, that definitely opens up. The second advantage or the positive that I see is that RBI is now not going to issue fresh FFMC licenses. So what's going to happen is the current universe of 1,500 or 1,700 licenses that are there in the market are the only ones who are going to exist. So no new operators are going to come in. So that kind of becomes restrictive in that sense. But also, I think increasingly the message RBI is giving is that they want to regulate a few entities, which is the AD1, AD2, and they have spoken about a new category called as AD3, specific to where they will provide foreign exchange services which are relevant to the category of business that they deal with. So I think it's kind of redefining the landscape, and I think our bond exchange business should benefit out of this one. Obviously, a lot of fine lines still needs to be defined, and I think RBI is kind of actively working on it and is going to roll out a paper on it, which will give us more direction in terms of how this will be operationalized.
Got it, sir. And so second question is on DEI. So the business, say, operates around in 14 countries, with UAE contributing around 50%, which is significant geographic concentration. So any plan, strategy to reduce this concentration, and which geographies do you believe have the highest growth potential ahead?
Ram, you want to?
Okay. Yes. So I think yes, we do operate in 22 countries, but in significantly of sizable nature, we operate in about 5 odd countries, which is Dubai is one among them. Dubai takes 50%. Our strategy right now would be to focus on the other markets where we are already operating, namely Singapore, Malaysia, Indonesia, and a good amount of Egypt and India also, and Thailand. So those are the markets where we are focusing on increasing. We do have options of going to new markets, but that this may not be the best time to do that because the cost structures are higher when you start new. We have still bandwidth available within these markets where we can grow further. Singapore, we hold about 80% market, 85% market share. So we have some more opportunity to grow there. But Malaysia and Indonesia are sizable in nature. In fact, just as we speak, we've signed up about 15 new potential partners in the coming 6 months that we'll be opening in between Indonesia, Singapore, China, Macau, and Hong Kong.
Got it, sir. Got it. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Anil Shah from Insightful Investment. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. My question is related to Sterling. So, Mr. Lalwani, you know, I'm just looking at your presentation slide 39. See, at the end of FY23, we had about 2,420 rooms, and in FY24, which is, you know, for those 2,420 rooms and whatever addition that you would have done in 24 during the course of the year, we saw the highest EBIT of almost 137 crores. After which we've added almost 1,200 to 1,300 rooms from there, maybe even more. Sorry, we've added, we are now at 3,800. But our EBIT continues to actually be steady in terms of 129 crores over the last 2 years, in fact, a decline from FY24. So I'm sure there is lots that's going on. One of the reasons, which I'm obviously probably is that the member ratio at that time was 69% in 24. That's come now. the guest ratio was 69, which has gone to 75. So you would have some member fees which are not there any longer. But, you know, we are not seeing growth. While we are seeing number of rooms, number of resorts, our footprints going up, I'm not seeing that percolating to EBIT. Could you just throw some light?
Okay, let me just tell you in 3 or 4 factors here. Now, over a period of time, as I said, the revenue stream on member acquisition has actually, we've stopped the member acquisition, so that revenue stream is down. Similarly, on the other hand, we've been trying to ramp up the number of resorts, and each of these resorts do have a ramp-up time involved. I've explained this also a little earlier, that whenever you open a resort, it takes 3 or 4 months to ramp up. And, you know, in fact, you get an upfront cost even before you start earning the revenues in these resorts. So there is always a lag of 2 or 3 months there. So in a ramp phase, you will face these aspects of, you know, lead and lag. And we've also substituted a lot of the business model, which was predominantly membership driven, into now predominantly resort driven. So which is now almost 85%, 90% of the overall game. So in this whole aspects of phase or scale, you know, when we had quarter wise, you had a couple of upfront costs. We've actually maintained the EBITDA margins. That's the level there. As I said, now as we keep scaling, it's only going to increase because of the fact that we've actually transformed this whole model here. Number one. Number two, you know, while the cost hit earlier,
while the ramp up of the new leased resorts happens over a time frame, some are seasonal in nature like Rajasthan. The depreciation on the ROU asset, which is actually affecting our EBIT, actually it's from month one itself. And the depreciation for these resorts are quite on the higher side. So that is another reason why you will find the EBITDA slightly dropping dropping slightly in FY25. Other reason is this is the first full year of where we don't have any membership acquisition related revenues. First full year. So the good news is that we are able to hold on to our EBIT. We are also able to increase our cash flows without any of those membership acquisition related revenues coming into our revenue stream. So these are two reasons, but the good news is EBITDA margin at 31% and 24% of EBIT margin, I think we are holding on. That is something good for us, which is purely coming from resort business. We will only build up from there.
And as we keep going ahead, the scale will start altering. Yeah.
So if we assume that we won't grow, let's say in FY27, and just keep the rooms at 30 at 10, where do you think we can actually make in terms of an absolute EBIT? It's a hypothetical question. I'm just trying to...
Okay, I know it's a little hypothetical. Let me answer this in a way. See, typically, I'm talking from an EBITDA point of view, all right, first, because that's a real operating story. From an EBITDA point of view, typically anything between 32 to 35% or a 36% is a great EBITDA, right? And seasonality, it will vary from quarter to quarter, as I said. Quarter one, quarter three will have a different, equation to it. So anything between 32 to 35% is actually, that range is actually a very stable range. And we will continue to maintain that stable range.
So if your question is 3810 rooms have to remain constant, where do you get your EBIT from?
EBIT or EBITDA, absolute. You know, sir is giving me margins, which means that I need to now then predict revenues. Now, revenues could be a mix of some of them are owned, some are managed, some are leased, you know, so...
To demonstrate that fact, Q4 revenues, if you have noticed, you would have seen an increase in occupancy, you would have seen an increase in the ARRs. These two factors, on a constant 3810 rooms, will definitely help us get the revenues up in the current financial year. and we are already seeing that happening in the month of April and to some extent in May also.
And even if you say that 67% of our total equation is P&L led routes. So it's not over asset light either. It's a well balanced portfolio, and we will continue to keep that portfolio well balanced. So as and when the occupancy in the AR or the RevPAR scales, this will automatically scale even now at a flat 3,800. And you also have the ramp ups of those other 14 over a period of years, which will complete one full year also.
Sure. Okay. My second question is, you know, on the DEI, we obviously, you know, nobody saw this coming, the war and, you know, peak season in Dubai. So we've got a 10 crore, I think, an EBITDA or an EBIT loss. Is that something that's, you know, that's something that's done and dusted and behind us? You've taken corrective actions to make sure that going forward, we will not see these kind of losses despite the situation and geopolitical remaining constant in Q1, Q2, and so on and so forth, sir?
Well, firstly, the time given was too little. So obviously, March was too late. This happened exactly. On the, if you all know the dates, it happened on 1st March, literally 28th February, to be precise. Right. And no, by the way, so the corrections have been done. Currently, what we look at is overhead corrections on people, low-cost centralization costs of moving certain parts, but all those takes time. It won't happen overnight. Even correction of people take a 30 days to a 90 or 60 days period of notice, etc. So to answer your question, it is not done and dusted, but also it will not be continuing in the same form. It will reduce, we'll have to stabilize it, and as long as we are confident that the business will come back, we can only do as much as required so that we can restart it quickly. We don't see a quick comeback, but if we see, as I told you all, that we see a 50 to 60% comeback, we are restructuring ourselves out to only sustain and deliver that number, and therefore also go into other areas of optimization, like our IT optimization. We're doing a lot of utilization of AI to reduce a lot of the IT services overheads, etc., balance some license versus owned models for some of the third-party services that we are taking, correcting some property area costs, and marketing and automation on outsourcing. All of this are being done simultaneously. You will see that quarter by quarter, the number reducing and then effectively coming back to positive.
Ram, if I may add to this. So Mr. Shah, Debashish here, and just wanted to add to what Ram is saying. So we have taken, as Ram detailed, in the last few minutes, we have taken a series of actions to optimize our cost on the both on the direct as well as on the indirect side, and each of these actions would lead to some sort of cost reduction, etc., but it would happen over time, over the next couple of months. However, one thing that we can't do much about is the actual situation on the ground in terms of travelers coming into the Middle East, which is the affected area, and consequent footfalls into the relevant parks or the sites. So the top line is something that we are still dependent on the ground conditions, on-ground conditions. So that is something that's not in our hands. Cost side, we'll see definitely improvements. And as and when this current situation eases or gets resolved, we will see the business bouncing back into profitability. And when it bounces back, it should bounce back stronger, because the changes done at the cost level are of long-term in nature and therefore should help us over the years. And it's not just one-time improvement.
Sure. Thanks. Thanks,
Devashish.
One last question, if I may. So, in the presentation, we've talked about having cash and equivalents of about 2,600 crores. And somewhere in the presentation, we've also talked about 1,600 crores of float.
Yes.
Minus the debt of 277 crores. So net cash with the company as of now should be closer to about 730-740 crores. Is that correct? That's net cash.
Yes, our estimating is correct.
Is that correct?
That estimating is correct, yes. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Ananya Khanna from Alpha Alternative. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. So I have a couple of questions. Firstly, I wish to understand why there was a drop in the performance of the financial services segment at both the top line and the bottom line levels. Secondly, I want to understand how you plan to tide over the impact of monsoon as far as the resort segment is concerned. And the third thing is, we could get some clarity on the timeline for the demerger. That would be great.
Okay. So there are three parts to your questions, Ananya. And I think I'll take one part of the question and let Debashish comment on the timelines for the demerger. And then I'll get Vikram to come back and talk about the effect of monsoon and stuff and how he's preparing for that. First, your question on foreign exchange and why the performance has been low in the quarter. I think kind of we spoke about it at great length, even in my opening commentary. If you look at for the quarter, I think it's a good performance. I think it's a growth both in terms of revenue as well as EBIT and also an improvement in the EBIT margin. If you look for the full year, it's a little flattish, and that reflects the trend. And I think kind of I alluded to the point that we've operated in an environment where two of the conflicts that emerge, one, the domestic conflict, which is Operation Sindoor stroke the Pahalgam attack, and the international conflict, which is the Israel-Iran-US conflict. I think both of them ended up in some kind of peak of our travel seasons, one which is the inbound season, one which was the outbound season. In both this, foreign exchange is a byproduct for both. One, in one case, I buy foreign exchange. In one case, I sell foreign exchange. So I think if you are looking at the full year, you are looking at more like a 9 or 10 month year rather than a 12 month year because it was impacted. Now, with that impact also, it's not just the impact to the business that could have done. It also impacted the sentiments. So obviously, people who were willing to travel, and I can't even anticipate what that number was, they didn't travel or they didn't make the decision to travel. And hence, you know, the business got impacted. But I think the noteworthy part, if you look at the full year performance, is that we held our EBIT at about 149 crores for the full year. And if you look for the quarter, we actually grew by about 17% despite the challenging environment in the current quarter. So I think there are some positives that we have seen. At the same time, there are external challenges which we could not have done anything about. And, you know, a large part of our business, if I look and I kind of correlate this to the market data that I mentioned about the LRS data, which showed a degrowth in the overall market, our portfolio actually grew. On top of it, if I have just to give a color to our float balances that we have, roughly about 16 billion rupees, you compare it with what we had as of December, it's the same number, which means that our, you know, customers are not spending, the money is still living on the card, customers are not traveling, and the spends are not happening, and that's why the float are accumulating. So I think it's a reflection that we haven't lost anything out there, it's just that the sentiments have been weak. I think despite that, the quarterly performance has been strong. Dipesh, you want to comment on the...
Yeah, thank you, Manish. So when we took the board approval for this particular demerger project, we said that it will take us 12 to 15 months. The project is currently on track. We have applied to the NSE and the BSE for relevant approvals, and we are in touch with them, answering the queries as we speak. We expect this process to get completed by Q1 of FY28, which was the original timeline that we had intimated.
Let me step in here, Vikram, on the question on monsoons. Let me answer that way. We can only hope that the rain gods are not too furious in quarter two. But having said that, there are two parts to it. One is an asset protection. So we have, you know, we are undertaking spends to ensure that in the event of a terrible monsoon, our assets are protected first. That's number one. Because in case there is any issues pertaining to that, it would actually cost us a loss more, which will impact us in Q3 to get this repaired. So that is step number one that we are taking care of, and we should be able to take care of that by mid of June. But on the other aspect in terms of if there is an issue, it normally affects, and what we've seen in the last 2 to 3 years, it normally tends to affect the north of India. you know, especially Himachal, Uttarakhand, you know, that it, and maybe sometimes even Kerala. It does tend to impact that. But that's why we see over a period of time, in the last 3 to 4 years, our approach has also been to de-risk by having a spread out portfolio through the country to the maximum possible extent. That's why incrementally every year we are de-risking the aspects of over-dependence on one quarter or over-dependence on one region. And in the previous earnings calls also I've mentioned that you know, during say the COVID time, where Q1 for example was the strongest quarter for sterling in the past maybe 4 or 5 years ago, actually today it's tilted to Q3 because of the fact, while the overall pie is growing, because of the fact that the portfolio has expanded to other areas beyond the hills, say for example. So therefore, as we go along, we are also de-risking the portfolio dependence on one region or portfolio dependence only on one particular quarter.
All right, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Mahavir Kalsiwala, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. So I am more interested in the MICE business segment, and I just wanted to know how has it performed on a QOQ and a YOY basis as per the revenue and profitability, and also like any updates you can give to me about the Q1 related developments in the MICE business you are seeing currently.
Mr. Mahavir, this is Mahesh. I'll take that question. As I mentioned again, I kind of covered a lot of that ground when I gave an opening remark. I think from a MICE business perspective, this year has been good despite the headwinds that we have faced during the year. If you look for the quarter, and if I have to exclude the government business that was done in comparable quarter of last year, our overall portfolio grew in terms of top line sales as well as profitability. We also mentioned that this was the year for the first time the MICE business across Thomas Cook and SODC had a gross margin in double digits. Typically, this business operates at single digit margins, closer to the 7-8%, and for the first time we had a double digit margin. It also shows how we have created experiences for customers and been able to extract our pound of flesh in kind of giving better services and better experience to our customer. Okay. If I look at the forward booking for MICE going forward, as I said, while for Q1, there is a little bit of, I would say, wait and watch approach that's happening, but the pipeline is strong. There is no dearth of pipeline in terms of inquiries that are coming from our customers. This is an integral part of the reward and recognition and the sales distribution program for a lot of our corporates. And hence, I think there is always going to be a deferment and not cancellation. So while you could see a shift from one quarter to another, overall, I don't think the volume will be missed in the financial year FY27.
Got it. And lastly, can you like give me a revenue split or a GBV split in the B2B and B2C segment you have?
As we said, our B2C business is roughly about 27-28%, and our B2B business is a balanced 72% in terms of revenue.
Got it. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you. As there are no further questions, I now hand the conference over to management for closing remarks.
Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen, for participating on this call. As I said before, FY26 was marked by significant geopolitical disruptions at both the start and the close of financial year, effectively truncating our sales and operating period to be more like less than 9 months. Despite these challenging environment characterized by airspace disruptions, elevated costs, and significant negative currency volatility, the Thomas Cook India Group delivered a very strong performance with consolidated income growing by 3% at 85,578 million. Looking ahead, while the environment remains uncertain, we are cautiously optimistic that peace will endure. Our focus remains on prudent fiscal management, leveraging technology for increased productivity and to deliver sustainable growth and value to our shareholders. I'm also happy, I just want to mention this point here, that our board of directors have recommended a dividend of 50 paise to a 1 rupee face value share, subject to approval of the shareholders. Thank you so much, and thank you for participating on the call.
Thank you. On behalf of the Thomas Cook India Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.